Blog Talk Radio.
Just a prisoner. Don't let me be a prisoner. From one command I stand and wait now. From what will master of mine fade now. I can't escape, for it's too late now. Let me be a prisoner. What's the good of my caring for someone sharing both arms, but not with me? Although she has another, and I can't have another.
Welcome to Delicious Talk. This is your host, Gail Delicious Johnson. It's 10:30. Do you know where your children are? That was James Brown, the late James Brown, A Prisoner of Love. Also, he has a movie coming out, I think, Friday. Get on up, so you guys make sure you check that out. I'm definitely going to check it out just to see, you know, if they got everything a little bit right about his life. You know, I know everything is going to be right, but, you know, it looks like a very good movie. Okay, moving right along, I have a few little topics I want to jump on really quick right here while I have everybody's attention. If you guys have been paying attention to the internet, they have these two threads going out. One is these kids are setting themselves on fire, and the other is them, I guess they're stopping their breathing, but, you know, it's just the both of them are very dangerous, so... You know, if you're a kid or, you know, you see these things going on, go in the opposite direction. You don't have to follow behind everybody. Somebody has to be a leader. And those things that these kids are doing today, they're just so dangerous. And, you know, it's really sad that society has come to that. You know, I've seen so many of them, different ones, setting themselves on fire in the shower. And one guy, he got burnt a little severely. And I understand that someone lost their life. Their life holding their that other game that they do where they press on your sternum and you can't breathe. You know, that can cause you to have brain damage too, because if you lose enough oxygen to the brain, it can you know, do brain damage, and also you can end up being dead. So I just want to say to anybody out there listening, any parent out there listening, you know, you have to keep your eyes on your kids. Don't let the television babysit them. Don't let the internet babysit them. You know, even kids that are 16, 17, 18 years old, they still need guidance. They still need you to keep an eye on them, because they're just doing crazy things, you know, and it's sad, you know, but that's really something I wanted to touch on. But this evening, let me bring on my my co-hosts and see what they have to say. Good evening, Jay. Good evening, Jadino. How you guys doing?
Well,
hello,
I'm good.
How are you?
I am fantastic.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, I am.
I'm unburnt and everything.
Oh, well, that is so good to hear. You know, and that's just something that I think needs to be addressed because, you know, these kids, they're just acting so crazy.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know if you mentioned it because I got on, like, right-wing stuff, but did you see the one where the girl boiled the water and threw it on her brother's back, and he had, like, third-degree burns? They were showing him, like, 4 weeks later.
No,
and I'm like,
no.
What made him think that wasn't going to be damaged? So
wow.
She boiled the water. I mean, they showed her boiled, the bubbles was coming out of everything. And she ran outside, and her brother was talking to another guy in the car with no shirt on, and she ran up and threw the whole thing of water on him, burnt his entire back and the back of both his arms.
They should charge her.
Then that'll show them it ain't a game out here.
That is true. You know, that is true because something definitely.
Human mutilation.
Yeah, something definitely needs to be done about all these crazy. Fast they're doing, and I understand that the one where they put their hand in your sternum and stop you from breathing after you, that they had a movie on the Life, I think it was the Lifetime Channel about that. And see, television sometimes is not even good. You know, you have to monitor your children and make sure they're doing the right thing.
Right.
You know, don't turn on the television and, you know, just let your child sit there and watch television until they're brain dead, because television is so detrimental to some people, because especially children, they can't decipher reality from fiction, and they think these things that they're seeing is, you know, is real, and they try them themselves, and it's just terrible. It's so sad that
peer pressure. They allow peer pressure, because I've seen one where the girl kept saying, "I don't want to pass out. I don't want to do this," and you know, fall out, and the girl kept saying, and the girl's holding her hand, and she kept saying, "Come on, so and so, come on," and she was like, "You know, I'm not going to let nothing happen to you. Nothing's going to happen to you. I'm right here." And I'm thinking, okay, so what if you pass out and something happens
right.
to you severely?
Oh, right, it was two of them, right?
It was two of them. Now I've seen one where it was just one girl. But then I seen the one where it was two of them, and the girl is saying she didn't want to do it, and
right.
the other girl is coaching her. So a lot of times, you know, and we've done it when we were younger, we allow peer pressure to get in the way of what we really don't want to do, and then we try to say, "Oh, I can do it. I'm cool. I, whatever, or I'm down," just to prove a point that you're not afraid, but deep down inside you really don't want to do it. And if you really don't do it, because the chances are the person standing next to you probably really don't want to do it either. And they may say, "Yeah, I don't want to do it either," but they're not
right.
doing
well,
it because you're just as pumped as they, or pretending to be pumped as they are.
Right. Well, did you see the one where the girl, she did it to a girl and she passed out and she had a seizure?
She had something, and they were screaming and calling an ambulance, but then they cut it off.
See, I mean, these kids, they don't know. You can die from that, but they're just so risque until it's sad. But this evening we have a very special guest who, while raising her young family, Dale obtained her RN degree in practice psychiatric nursing. She parlayed her medical and extensive sales experience to become CEO of her distinct destination management company, which for 20 years organized conventions, corporate events, and meetings for local, national, and international guests. Dale conducted numerous educational seminars and assisted in developing a Taurus College degree program. She serves on the North Shore Board of Juvenile Scholarship Aid, volunteered as a big sister, and is an active member of Power of Woman, National Association of Women on the Rise, and the Arizona Humanitarians Consortium for the Arts. A lifelong learner, she studies Kabbalah and Torah and shares her personal journey to encourage others to rise above their circumstances, no matter how difficult, using their inner strength to determine the course of their own lives. She resides in Boston and Phoenix with her husband. Now, Dale was the daughter of a hooker, and she wrote a book titled A Hooker's Daughter, Memoirs of Dale Stanton. So without further ado, we're going to bring in our special guest and get this show on the road. Good evening, Dale. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for the invite tonight to speak with you and your listening audience.
You're more than welcome, darling. Tell us a little bit about your childhood.
Okay, well, this memoir, The Hooker's Daughter, that I've written, is a story depicting starting with my life as a child, being aware that my mother was a prostitute, and basically I recount that I was opening the door for John's by age six, and it's really a story of a lot of dysfunction within the family life as a youngster and going and growing. It really prevailed throughout my lifetime, and a lot of antisocial behaviors went on, and lots of problems and shame followed me, and gossip and guilt and a lot of rejection. So it was a lifelong journey of problems.
Well, let me ask you this. You said you were 6 years old when you was opened the door for John's. How did you know that then, or was it later on in your life you realized, looking back on it, that that's what you were doing?
Well, I knew then. I knew it wasn't the right thing. I knew things were awry. I don't know that I could have articulated it quite as well or as clearly as excuse me, as an adult that I would do that, but I certainly knew that things were not right.
Okay. And I think I had read somewhere where your mother had did this to supplement the income because your father was unable to work, or is that the case?
Well, my father did live with us, was at home, and he did work, but very limitedly, and let me put it this way, unenthusiastically. And perhaps he was in what we in today's world might call clinically depressed, but he really brought home meager monies, and I often said or felt that if we didn't have shoes on, I don't know that he would have noticed it. And so my mother, I believe, was really saving us from a life of poverty, as she depicted it to be.
So let me ask you this. Did your father know that this was good? She brought her John's at home, right?
Yes, but she also had business out in the community and beyond the environment of the community, of there in other places. But this was not going on while my father was at home. It was a very well-known, open secret. And they played the dance. He made off that he didn't know, and she would hide it from him. However, he would confront her, I think, when the stories got to be too much, or gossip or whatever would trigger him to, excuse me again, being confrontational. So it was a dance that they did. But it wasn't like that he was in the house and the activity would take its place. But also, she did operate outside the home as well.
Okay. So now this started when you was 5 or 6, right?
Yeah.
Were there any problems with the Johns coming? Did any of the Johns ever try to approach you? And I understand you had a sister as well.
That's correct. No, I would only say in my later years, let's say my high school years, I might be standing at the bus stop to be going to school, and maybe one would or so occasion would ride by and say, oh, you know, are you her daughter? But actually, beyond that, I got away very relatively unscathed.
Well, how did you feel growing up? You know, as you got older, did your friends know, and were you ridiculed for that?
Oh, most definitely. It's the kind of thing that young people don't talk to each other about because, I think that it's not something that young people are brave enough to say, oh, and certainly many of them were either forewarned limitedly, either to go to my house, or some were taken away from me to play with me, others weren't. But, I mean, I knew friendships were broken up, and young men, when I was dating, were taken away from me because their families were concerned that I might be a bad influence. And I even write in my book and tell the story, I was probably 10, a little lovely little darling myself, and I was in the Girl Scouts, and they actually asked me to leave because they were afraid I'd be a bad influence on the other children. So it was not an easy time.
So basically, and how long, when did this ridicule start? When you were in started school or in your teens, and how long did it last? And just how did you actually handle that? Because I would be, I would be so afraid to even be in society, so to speak, if every time someone was saying that's the girl's, that's the mother's daughter, you know, or if a John was coming down the street and he may even have it on his mind that he wanted to get with me. So how did you actually handle that at such a young age, you know, in your teens and then relationships?
Well, it was always a passing in my heart, not to sound dramatic, but it was very difficult. But I feel that I was blessed with very good DNA because I was able at a very young age to say to myself that I needed to stay strong and take care of myself because I knew that my environment was not the place that was going to nurture me properly and that the only one that was going to be able to do it was myself in terms of keeping myself sort of abstract to the situation.
Wow, well, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to come right back and continue this conversation with Del Stanton, the daughter of a hooker.
You're listening to Bringing Sexy Back, right here on Delicious Talk Radio. There is no religion or politics spoken here, only delicious adult conversation. Audience participation is encouraged, so log in and create an account to engage in conversation in our chat room. Feel free to call in with your questions and comments at 646-652-2877. That's 646-652-2877. And let's get this delicious talk conversation going.
Her kiss and I heard her caress. Oh, that used to mean so much. And bring you happiness. Giving her so hard to do. I've tried, but it just ain't no use giving her.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Can I hear you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the music is pretty loud, but I can hear you faintly.
I said I tried, but it just ain't no use. But my light of hope is burning dim.
That was the late Donny Hathaway. Giving up is hard to do. Hope you guys like that. Alrighty, we're back with Delicious Talk on the segment, Bringing Sexy Back. If you have any questions or comments for our guest this evening, Dale Stratton, feel free to call in 646-652-2877. Again, that number is 646
652-2877. And if any of my co-hosts, do you have any questions or comments you'd like to speak with?
I just had a comment.
Okay.
I wanted to tell Miss Gail that I commend her for feeling like, you know, her mother was in a situation and that she needed to step up and take care of herself to say that, you know, I need to do this. If nobody's going to show me how to do this, then I need to live my life right and do this, because a lot of times we see what's going on with our parents, and whether we think it's wrong, right or wrong, sometimes we fall into the entrapment or the pattern of following behind their footsteps. So, you know, I've known a lot of people who their parents are drug addicts or alcoholics or whatever their characteristic is. Sometimes they fall into that same pattern. And so I just wanted to commend you for saying you were going to break that chain and do something different with your life.
Well, thank you for your comment. It's very heartening, and that's exactly how I felt. And even writing this book, The Hooker's Daughter, I feel that I had something to offer people by going out with it, the coming out with the story and showing the transparency that, in fact, people can overcome dire circumstances, even though, and you just referred to families that might have alcohol problems, drugs, whatever, and that no matter what the conditions are, we can ideally take stock of ourselves and try to do the best we can to overcome them.
That is so true. That is so true. And just as Jade had mentioned, you know, children sort of like emulate what their parents do regardless of whether it's right or wrong. And you could have, like she had mentioned, also been a drug addict, or you could have even been a prostitute as well, but because of your strength. Now, who was the person that helped you to keep on that right path? Was there anybody that you confided in, or, you know, someone that you trusted that, you know, sort of kept you going in the right direction?
Well, I love that question, because I'd like to answer it from the point of view, first of all, as a child, I felt very isolated and alone, that nobody was coming to rescue me from what I saw as perversive and a dysfunctional home life. And I was very much on my own, trying to keep myself strong. And no, I did not have a mentor or an advisor or even a relative that looked after me. And many people have asked me that. Where were your grandparents through this? And that sort of trend of thinking. However, at age 23 years old, I had never spoken about it with anybody. And no matter what bumps in the road I had already experienced at that point, I never, again, as I'm saying, discussed it with anybody. But I realized that I needed help to sort of sort through everything and where I was going and what I was going to do with my life. So I sought out a psychiatrist, which was, for those days, a big stigma to even think about going to a psychiatrist. I mean,
right.
And so I would have to say that at that turning point, I refer to it like a flag unfurling itself, that I went. It was the first person I spoke about it with, and maybe I have to credit that relationship with giving me courage and the ability to be able to sort through all the demons that were hanging over me.
Okay, now, it was just you and your sister, or did you have any other siblings?
No, just the two of us.
How was your sister? She's younger than you or older?
Well, that was very sad for me. My sister is 6.5 years older than I am, and in many ways she was my caretaker and very nurturing as a young person to me. And I was age 9, and she was 16 at the time, And she came out as a lesbian. And with that having happened, she ran away from home. And then when the police found her, and I read all about this, they put her in a convent. And then the courts sent her to a mental institute, not because she was crazy, but because that's what they did in those days. They didn't know how to treat that kind of situation.
Depression.
And eventually she ran away from home and was homeless for a number of years and struggled with her issues about choosing that kind of lifestyle. There was no such thing in those days as gay pride, parades and marriages and children within the unions. Excuse me. So it was heartbreaking to me. I suddenly saw this person with a very masculine persona who was struggling in her own right, and it frightened me. And for those days, being gay was a radioactive subject, and it was the 50s. So I didn't see a lot of her over the next 20 years because we were each on our own life path. And my heart was broken. I mean, we loved each other, but we were children. And as we grew and eventually got together in our later lives, but I like to refer to Nietzsche, who said, what does not destroy me makes me stronger. And that was part of the experience. Was this all going to destroy me as well?
Wow. So is your sister, is she still a lesbian, or what is her life now?
Yes, no, she is. She's a lesbian. I think she, well, I don't even want to say I think. I know she struggled off and on in her earlier years trying to go straight, and she had periods when she was, but it really was only, I mean, finally, she gave in to who she really was and what mattered to her. And here, and I live in Massachusetts, that's legal. Marriage is legal here, gay marriage, and she is, in fact, in a marriage with a wonderful partner. And her life is, thank God, very good. By the way, Gail, where are you housed? Where am I speaking to you, and what city are you?
I live in... Yeah, we live in Maryland. I'm from Maryland. I'm originally from Washington, D.C., but I transplanted to Maryland about 14 years ago.
Oh,
so,
okay. Is gay marriage acceptable in Maryland?
I think, in Maryland?
It's in,
I don't know.
Think it's in Virginia.
I know it is in D.C.
Yeah, it is in D.C.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just went to it away in about a couple of months ago.
Yeah, so it is accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good, and it is good, you know. I know that for insurance purposes, it benefits the couples as well. I did want to ask you, though, did gay or straight, did your sister find herself moving in your mother's pattern to take care of the two of you?
My sister, no. No, I think it also affected her the same way. We were very... adverse. I think we got knocked around so much, and I think that we were very anti getting off the path, let's say. So I like to compare to it if one thinks of a chalkboard, of like that screeching sound of going down the chalkboard with your nails. We struggled trying to have normal lives and getting ourselves together. So she did her struggles, I mean, separate from mine, because, as I said, in many ways, and not negatively that we didn't love each other, but we were really estranged and on different life journeys. And so she had herself quite a go at it as well.
Well, what happened? Is your mother still living?
No. My mother's passed away.
Okay. How long was she a prostitute, and what type of effect did it take on her mentally and physically when you were growing up?
Well, I think in many ways she suffered a great deal too, because she was rejected from society from the point of view that it certainly wasn't a favorable thing to be doing. And yet, on the other hand, first of all, let me add that she was a very beautiful-looking person, and she had a lot of charisma, and she was very sensitive and kind. And she brought us up to be kind and sensitive and never to shame others, despite the fact that we might have felt shame from her activities. But that being said, she, I think it was difficult for her, and yet it brought other good things. It's a very complex situation to look at when you really examine it. In many ways, I really admired her because I felt that she did save us from poverty and took care of us and nurtured us. And on the other hand, her inability to set boundaries was very destructive. And we lied and we cheated to protect her. And it took its toll.
How long
so she benefited in many ways. I mean, she kept it all going. And she, again, to reiterate, she was a very charismatic person, and she had a wonderful attitude about her seizing the moment and enjoying life and people, and she had a great spirit.
How long was your mom a prostitute from what length of time?
To the end of her life. I don't think her business, I know it was and what it was when she was a younger woman, but I know that if she had an opportunity to turn a trick here or there in her older age, she did. And it just was the way it was. I think she was so conditioned in her life, and especially as she got older, and the lack of money, it became more prevalent because she no longer had the control that she had as a younger woman. Her beauty, of course, faded. Her energy was different. But I think that she might have maintained a few customers here or there.
Okay. Wow. Well, now your dad, is he still living or is he deceased?
No. Both parents have long gone.
Okay. What was the effect it had on your dad when he found out, and what did he do as far as, like, covering up? Was he an alcoholic or, you know, what did he do?
No, well, he lived at home. I said, I believe before, he wasn't too enthusiastic about working too hard. I mean, he worked, but I don't think it's apparent to me anyway that he didn't cover the bills or the needs of the family, the immediate needs. And I think my mother was very frightened of poverty, and that's where I credited her. As much as I wanted to be angry with her, and I was, I also feel she saved us. So it was a two-folded kind of situation. Anyway, I know he knew, but yet he would deny it, and she would deny it, and if he approached her because he would hear gossip and so forth and so on, she would deny it, and that was the dance that they did, and it would quiet down again in terms of the confrontations between them. And then occasionally I recall, you know, it would erupt in terms of the situation, but it was always a denial, and on the dance would continue.
Did you ever want to say anything to your mom about her being a prostitute, or you just out of respect or love or anger said nothing?
Oh, no, I definitely said things. I tried to control it when I was younger, like, why are you doing this? Don't do this, or whatever. All kinds of energy spent on it as a child. And I, of course, I had no control. And, I mean, if you think about it, none of us can really control anybody. We'd like to think we can change their behaviors. And I thought perhaps that I could. And even as I got older, sure, I was angry, confused, hurt.
Wow. Well, that's, you know, a situation where I think that when children are confronted, they basically may say things to their parents, you know, Mom, why are you doing this? You don't have to do it. Why don't you get another job or get on welfare? I mean, I can't see, because if you know, everybody's different. But in my case, I would have rather received money from the state, you know, handouts, opposed to selling my body, you know, because like what I said, everybody has their own priorities and they do what they feel that's best for them. Your mother didn't want to obviously receive any type of assistance, it seems like, because I'm quite sure they had it set up, you know, back then where you could get public assistance or some type of help from the state. So what was her fear of going that route?
I don't know. I really couldn't answer that. And maybe, just maybe, she really wouldn't have been eligible, because with it all, my father still was there, living there, and the fact that whatever he brought in, it, you know, it's like what makes people poor, poverty. She probably might just been at that level where she couldn't rise to the next levels, or it always would have been a life of sort of in that assistance, and maybe she didn't want that or couldn't be eligible for it. It's interesting. I help out an elderly relative, quite elderly, and she really is suffering. She has children that are not well, and it's really a very sad situation. And I looked into social service agency funds and things that could assist her. And let's say her income was, her money's coming in was $25,000. I mean, it's just roughly whatever the figure, actual figure was. She just was a little bit above the line to be able to receive any assistance. So I'm sure that I'm making a general comment, not necessarily about my environment, and that might have been the case. But here's somebody I know of, and I'm sure there are many people in this country who might just slip through the cracks because they're not either here or there, and they're struggling with the limitations of what they can either receive or get. And, I mean, we can even talk about when we're all very aware that people are looking for higher wages now in some work conditions that need to be improved, and they can't even make ends meet. So I think that it's a bigger problem than just saying, well, okay, I'll get assistance. And even then, that might not have done the trick or been available in the way that we think. So that's just my own kind of personal feeling about, you know, if that was the case, everybody would arise above where their struggle might be.
Right. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back, and we're going to talk about where you're at now and, you know, what you're doing now with your life. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Listen up. I got to tell you about this beautiful author and publisher, Gail Delicious Johnson. Gail Delicious Johnson is proud to announce the publication of her new, revised issue of her latest suspenseful novel, Back to Zero. Read this riveting story of intrigue, conflict, love, and suspense. Follow the trail of abuse, secrets, lies, and love. And check it out. You can't just read the back of the book, because you have to prepare yourself for the mind-blowing, explosive ending. Order your personally autographed copy of Back to Zero by visiting www.jjpublishing.com. That's www.jayjaypublishing.com.
Here we are, the two.
We're right back here at Delicious Talk Radio, the segment Bringing Sexy Back. That was Atlantic Star, Secret Love, Lover. And that was really something back in the day. All right, we're back here with our special guest, Dale Stanton, who was the daughter of a prostitute. She told us about growing up, answering the door at 6 years old for her mother's johns, her father's inability to want to work, and how her sister is turned out to be a lesbian, but she's very happily married. And so things we're going to talk about now is a cool down to Dale's life. Okay, The Hooker's Daughter, a memoir by Dale Stanton. That was, you was inspired to write that simply because of what you went through in your life. Let me ask you this. How long did it take you to write that book? And did you have to do any research on it? Is it things in there that people may read and know that it's them? Or, you know, how does it go?
Okay, well, first of all, that was always in my head. I mean, having lived through the experiences, it was something that the story was in my head. It was certainly easy. Everything in this memoir is true. I did change just a couple of names out of respect for a couple of people that I didn't want to reveal certain roles for them. And I felt I wanted my children to really know about my past. I had shielded them from it all the years of their growing up, and I waited till they were in their teens, late teens, to even approach it. And at that point, when I wrote it for them, my husband said, oh, my God, you have to put the story out there because it's quite a story. It's almost not believable. And with that, his encouragement, which was really key to it, I did decide to go forth and put it out. And it was a very difficult decision. And I really suffered about doing that. After I went public with it, I said, why did I put myself in this position? I was angsting about it. And I, at first, was sorry. However, the tide turned for me. I began to hear from people. And they were so, I think, touched in their own lives in many ways, because my transparency enabled them to get in touch with some of their hidden feelings or their things that had been difficult for them. And I think maybe my courage released a lot of that. And so it was a very wonderful experience. The journey was more than I would have ever anticipated. Actually, I didn't anticipate that happening at all. I guess I chose to own my story and not bury it and let it fester and define me. And essentially, I got to write the ending. And as we all know, the famous Dr. Carl Jung, a quote from him is, I am not what has happened to me. I am what I choose to become. And by owning my story, I very much, well, I was my own person, but even more so.
Wow. So you approached your, how many children do you have?
I have two. I have a son and a daughter.
Okay. Then you approached them when they were in their teens. How did they accept that? And have they read the book?
They accepted it. I think they, in many ways, were surprised. Unfortunately for them, they also didn't have an easy upbringing, which shattered me even further. Their father was gravely ill for 6.5 years, dying a very slow, long, sad period. So they got robbed of their childhood in many ways that would have been normal. And in a certain sense, they were tougher than maybe from a traditional kind of home environment. So I think they held up very well to it. And yes, they did read the book, and I wouldn't have put it out there without their permission. And I believe, as a result of all the good that's happened, I think that they're quite proud of the whole unfolding of this. I'm very grateful because I've been invited to speak at many organizations and give presentations many, many places, and book clubs, and just different wonderful things that have happened to me, and have met wonderful people. Many, of course, or most of them, I don't know, and yet they have chosen to share their joys or their problems with me. And certainly, I'm not a therapist. However, I think again, my transparency has helped them feel a level of comfort. And that is such a gift to me that I could have never experienced. And I think that my children benefited from all these rewards that I have been able to glean from doing that.
Okay, so have they read the book?
Oh, yes. Oh, of course.
Okay. All right. Now, your husband, is he still ill or is he...
Oh, no. That husband, my first husband, he passed away many years ago when the children were quite young. And, in fact, I was a single mom, and that, too, had its problems and sadness and, again, going through more. So I felt like I went from one... or more than one, but difficult situation into another, and I did bring up my children, and it was sad times.
Wow. Wow, well, you know, you went from being a victim to a survivor, and I have to commend you for that, because just as the co-host Jade has spoke, you could have took a 360-degree turnaround in the opposite direction, but you had the strength and the courage to go the other route and to, you know, live your life differently from what you was accustomed to seeing your mother do. You know, you didn't repeat what she had did, and I definitely commend you on that, and congratulations on, you know, you're writing your book and getting it out there, you know, so other people can see that may be in the position that you were in, and, you know, found a way to overcome whatever it is they were going through or getting ready to go through, because people suffer differently on different levels. And, you know, some people are not as fortunate to get the help that they need or get the support that they need to keep them afloat, to keep them from becoming drug addicts or to keep them from becoming abusers and, you know, different things of the sort. So, again, I commend you for that. And
thank you.
You know, happy that you're happy. And now let's talk a little bit about your organizations that you started. And then we'll, you know, begin to wrap the show up once you give us a little bit more information as far as how people can get in touch with you. But let's talk a little bit about this organization, Destination Management Company. How did
Yes, I have to say, actually, I almost wish I had even put, I mean, there's quite a bit about it in the book, but I wish I had even written more, because it became like the love of my life. I created this company where I was a receiver for conventions and conferences that came into the city of Boston, and I would set up their programming and planning for their meetings, which could be 4 or 5 days. They'd come from all over the world and have, it could be a medical conference, for example, just a highlighter, or a business conference, and I would provide tours and special events and busing and whatever the conference needed. And then I developed another portion of the company providing for local Bostonians trips, cultural opportunities, trips in and around New England that they could go to worthwhile places to as tourists to visit. And I'm not a travel agent. It wasn't any of that. It was, you know, strictly, again, working with that kind of audience, if you will. And it was the most wonderful business. I depended on a lot of people to be able to help me. I had all kinds of people working for me, escorts, guides, everything. And it was just wonderful. So I was very grateful for having found a niche that I so appreciated. And now I'm also very fortunate, because after I retired from that business, I wrote this book, and I suddenly found myself doing this whole thing, like even being on the air with you right now. I mean, how lucky am I, how grateful I am to be speaking to you and having, hopefully, your listeners enjoying what our chat is all about. And maybe perhaps if they read the book, which I hope they do, they'll glean something from it that will encourage them to lead their lives fully and appreciate and be grateful for breathing the air and living a good life. And so, I mean, it's a wonderful journey, one that I wouldn't have anticipated.
Wow. Well, you know, it's always good that once you, you know, because it's a saying that I heard Les Brown say, if you fall on your back, you can see up and you can get up. So that's basically
how I'm looking at
your situation. Yeah, you know, because that's a true statement. If you fall on your back and you see up, you can get up. And I've fallen on my back so many times, but by the grace of God, I've always gotten up, you know. But some people, when they do get down there, they can't get up, or for some reason they won't get up. But, you know, I can't commend you enough for what you did with your life and your children and, you know, all the pain and suffering you went through, and then to still come out and write a book, and, you know, you're speaking and, you know, doing all these great things behind the fact of what your mother went through. And, you know, I just can't commend you enough. With that being said, let everybody know how they can get your book, the title of your book, and if you have a website that they can visit you on and where you are located.
Okay, well, thank you for that. It is, my website is www.thehookersdaughter.com. Very simple. And if anybody chooses to purchase it on my website, I'll be happy to autograph it, and there is a mechanism for them to be able to indicate that. Also, the book is for sale through Amazon, and through Infinity Publishing, and also for tablet readers, Nook, Kindle, iBook readers, it's available that way as well. And as far as speaking engagements, I've been, again, blessed to be invited to various organizations that I've spoken at and lifelong learning centers and book clubs. Here I am in Boston. I just recently had the experience of Skyping with a book club in Kansas City, no less, and another one in New Jersey. So on and on, it just sort of mushrooms and proliferates. So if any of your listeners would ever like that to be an experience for them, I'm available for that kind of thing. And on my website, anybody that chooses, they can see the upcoming events that I will be speaking at. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to a formal thing in 2 weeks. So life is good.
Oh, that is wonderful.
All right.
And they can get your book.
Yes, The Hooker's Daughter, and that would be on www.thehookersdaughter.com or Amazon.com has it. Infinity Publishing is another source, and all the tablets, which would be Nook, Kindle, iBooks, all that, Smashwords, and my idea is we all have deficiencies and wounds and flaws that are hard to admit to, but we have to face our imperfections as part of us, and to deny them is to hide from ourselves and from each other. And life is really not about flawlessness, but about overcoming. And this is the message when I go out to try to tell people that, you know, hopefully stay strong and overcome, and it works.
Yes, it does. You just have to be strong and keep the faith. You know, as long as you stay strong, keep the faith, things are going to work out for you, and you have to keep the faith. That's the most important thing right there, because it doesn't matter how strong you are. If you don't have faith, it's not going to work. So you have to
absolutely
keep the
faith is very important.
And be strong. Yes. So I'm quite sure that's a lot of faith that brought you through what you came through. You know, so, again, I can't commend you enough. Jade and Jadino, do you have any closing remarks for Dale?
I actually just wanted to ask her on when she said she had sought help at one point, but it seemed like to me her writing her book was, like, the best way to come full circle with her situation. Do you feel that way?
Are you asking me that, dear?
Yes, I am.
Oh, yeah. Well, I must say, to sit down and write such a story, a life's journey of that, I had definitely had to have catharsis to do it. It's very difficult to just sit down and pen something like that. So I was well along the way. However, having had this been received so well, it probably did close that circle of, wow, this is even more than I would have hoped for. So it's kind of a twofold. I was able to do it because I felt like, you know, I was very much strong enough to, and yet I gleaned more out of the experience.
Oh, okay. That's why I just feel like when I hear people write or express themselves, I mean, you can seek help, but in the long run, I think you have to figure out a way to manage your situation. And it sounds like that's what you need.
Right.
Wow. It does. It seems therapeutic when people write. Sometimes that seems like a lot of help, you know, that you kind of expel that energy, that the negative energy or the emotional energy that you're feeling when you write. It's like you're getting it out, and it helps you and motivates you.
I think that's true. And so many people, that's what I've encountered being out there. Strangers will come up to me and tell me things that they've kept buried and hidden and are uncomfortable with or struggle with, And it's like, my transparency enables them to feel like, oh, wow, maybe I could do this and maybe that, you know. And I mean, it's so gratifying when that happens, gratifying to know maybe with a little bit of luck I'm helping somebody. And I like people to think of, and maybe this is one of the thoughts as we're going to conclude today's discussion, that first of all, I'm very grateful for being my own person and loving my life and my relationships with loved ones and life's small everyday moments. And most of all, I'm so blessed because I don't take anything for granted. Sure, there are scars. There's no doubt about that. But they have faded far more than I could have ever hoped for. And I think that's what I hope comes across to people that choose to read the book and listen to what I want to say to them. And life is like a river. It's in perpetual motion, and when we flow with it, we attain a level of tranquility. We never know what the future is going to hold, but we can come to terms with the river and make friends with it and allow it to teach us to be present in the here and the now and not waste our lives, because that's all we have.
Absolutely.
That is so true.
Absolutely.
That is so true. Well, let the people know once again how they can get in touch with you, and then we're going to be closing the show down.
Okay. As a matter of fact, getting in touch with me, if in fact after they read the book or choose to, apart from my website, which we said was www.thehookersdaughter, at the end of the book and also on my website, I have an email that they can certainly be in touch, and I'd love hearing from anybody who chooses to do that. And, again, Amazon has it available, and all the tablet forms and Infinity Publishing. So I do hope that if anybody chooses to read it, that they like what they read, and I'll be so thrilled to hear from them if they choose to do that.
All right. Well, you guys out there listening, please go to the website and order Dale's book, The Hooker's Daughter. Very intriguing story of her memoirs, and I'm quite sure that who's out here listening, I'm quite sure you learned something this evening and pick up her book, and you may find a little bit of relief in it if you're going through what she's been through, you know, because sometimes people can relate when something, they see something happens to someone and it's happening to them, you know. So pick up her book. That's thehookersdaughter.com, and you can get it on infinitypublishing.com or amazon.com, and it's on all the Kindles. Again, that's thehookersdaughter.com. And with that being said, we're going to give Dale a great big round of applause for being our guest this evening. Alrighty then. Dale, we do appreciate you being here tonight, and you can come back anytime. If you get any more books out, you know, you can email me, let me know, and we'll have you back on the show. We can talk about that or any other type of information you'd like to get out there. You can just hit me up, my email address, you know that. And again, we appreciate you for coming on tonight.
Well, thank you, and as I said earlier in the evening, thank you for inviting me this evening. It's been a pleasure to interact with you, and I want to wish you and your audience, everybody, good health and all that important stuff that we need to have to make our lives fruitful and good. So, again, much thanks to you.
You're welcome. Okay, Jay, do you want to let everybody know where you do on Blog Talk Radio and what you're up to?
Okay, so long now, right?
Pardon?
Is it okay? Should I go along?
Oh, you can hang on. You can hang on until we close the show out.
Okay, thank you.
The listeners can find me on also on Blog Talk Radio on Erotic Talk Radio every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, where you're my, Miss Delicious is my co-host. And on Saturdays, I have Slow Jam on Saturdays at 10:30 p.m. The G-Spot Love Zone is at 10:30 p.m. and Erotic Talk Radio is at 9 p.m. on Thursday. So, thank you.
Okay. Jadino?
Oh, yeah. I'm Jadino Blasco. Everything Art. You can reach me on Facebook, and you can also Gmail me at Jadino Blasco. That's jdinoblasco@gmail.com. Live things going on. I'm just happy to be here. I'm living the life.
All right.
He's definitely.
Hey, bravo,
doing that.
Bravo.
And you guys know who I am. I'm Gail Delicious Johnson. I wear so many hats until sometimes I get tired of hearing myself say them. But you know, I'm an author, poet, speaker. You know, I just do a variety of things. You know, but if you want to know anything really about me, you can just Google Gail Delicious Johnson, and that'll bring up a wealth of information. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. I'm all over the place. I have a fan page on Facebook, which is JJ Publishing. That's J-A-Y Publishing on Facebook. And my Facebook page is Gail Delicious Johnson. Twitter, my handle over there is Delicious58, but I haven't been over there for a while, but I am there. And just want to let everybody know that, you know, Bringing Sexy Back is for the mature listening audience, and our subject matter is sexual, but it's not limited to other social topics. We discuss relationships, current events, and issues relevant to everyday life. We appreciate you, our listening audience, for your questions and comments. And if you have a show that you'd like, if you have a topic you'd like for us to discuss or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to me. That's gjdelicious37@gmail. Or to either of my co-hosts. Rhea is going to be out for a little while. She's had death. She lost her fiance, but, you know, she's still in our prayers, and we still love and miss her. So, but you also can email Jadino Blasco. He just gave up his email address. And we're here, you know, every Wednesday from 10:30 p.m. for an hour to an hour and a half, or sometimes if the topic is really juicy, we're here for the 2 full hours of adult conversations. And these shows that we do over here on Delicious Talk Radio for the mature audience that's 18 and up. Anyone who's younger than that listening, I'm not going to be held responsible. So you already know that this, you know, my shows are definitely geared for the 18 and up. With that being said, if you're driving, don't drink. If you're drinking, don't drive. I like talking to you, not about you. You guys be safe. Have a beautiful weekend. Love you guys. And I just want to say good night. And thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Everybody have a beautiful weekend. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
My Nana got the best radio show on the Internet.